Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight. I'm Paris Schutz.
And I'm Brandis Friedman. On the show tonight, as interest rates climb, home prices see a 9-year low. We talk about what it means if you're trying to buy a house right now.
Working weekends, working double shifts, not spending time with their families.
Nurses at two state facilities say they're facing the brunt of a staffing shortage. We have a live report from Dunning.
Neighbors report damage to Douglas Park following the concerts at Riot Fest.
At the beginning of his final season in Chicago, maestro Riccardo Muti reflects on his years leading the mighty Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Fantastical folk art creatures take over Wheaton's Katini Park.
And instead of cars, a fleet of robots will deliver your food. Details into a new pilot program to test the devices in Chicago.
And Brandis, Paris, as you mentioned, I'll be reporting live tonight in Dunning for our Chicago Tonight in Your Neighborhood series. And we are going to hear about nursing shortages at two state-run facilities here. Also speaking with the local alderman. And we'll serve up some dessert, that and more. But first, back to you.
All right, Amanda, we're really looking forward to that. And now to some of today's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling on two state senators from his own party to resign. State Senator Emile Jones III is facing federal charges for allegedly taking a bribe from a firm that installed red light cameras in the state. And State Senator Michael Hastings is accused of abusing his wife and has faced charges of verbal abuse from a state house lobbyist. Hastings has denied all of those charges. The calls to step down come as both Jones and Hastings resigned from their leadership positions at the request of the Senate president. In a statement, Governor Pritzker, who is up for re-election, says, quote, resigning only their leadership roles falls short of what the public should expect. I want to send a clear message to the people of Illinois. Corruption and abuse have no place here. The Illinois Supreme Court rules 6-0 that two former state senators are not allowed to receive back pay for raises they voted to reject when they were in office. Former Democratic state senators James Claiborne Jr. and Mike Nolan argued the salary reduction measures they voted for violated the Illinois Constitution. This after a lawsuit that Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza brought about 5 years ago. She says the ruling saves taxpayers $10 million or more. An Indiana judge is blocking the state's ban on nearly all abortions just a week after it went into effect. Abortion clinic operators say the ban violates the state constitution. They argue in a lawsuit that Indiana's constitution actually protects access to the medical procedure. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita says in a statement that they plan to appeal the judge's decision. Some Cook County residents will have one less tax come next summer. That's after Cook County commissioners unanimously passed the wheel tax elimination ordinance. It puts an end to drivers in unincorporated parts of the county from having to register their vehicles, like some places require a city sticker.
This ordinance is supported by the Chicago Metropolitan Planning Agency, who last year published a report highlighting the detrimental impact transportation fees and fines can have on low-income residents.
The county's finance bureau says revenue from the wheel tax accounts for less than 0.5% of the county's more than $8 billion budget. The ordinance is set to take effect June 30th, 2023. And up next, a live report from Chicago's Dunning community, so please stay with us.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by Alexandra and John Nichols, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Many city employees and people of Polish descent call the neighborhood of Dunning home, as do veterans who at long last are beginning to move into the state's newest veterans home. The Northwest Side community area has a storied and, in some cases, grim history. Our Amanda Vinicky and Acacia Hernandez spent time in Dunning as part of our Chicago Tonight in Your Neighborhood series, and Amanda joins us now. Amanda.
Brandis, back in the late 19th century, Dunning was often considered a scary place.
Parents used to threaten their children that if you didn't behave, if you didn't eat your breakfast, that they'd send you to Dunning.
Now, that is because Dunning was the site of an asylum for those considered to be insane, and they were not treated well. There are references to it as a tomb for the living. Also in Dunning, what's known as, or was known then, as a poorhouse, really a farm where people in poverty were able to grow food to eat. Now, some of those long ago residents will be considered, spend their eternity in Dunning, that is, and that's because swaths of the area were used as a potter's field or a burial ground for the indigent. History buff and longtime Northwest Side resident Dan Pogoshelski told me about how that has messed with some modern day plans.
Park Avenue was recently worked on, where excavation crews literally had to change where the sewers in the actual under the road were, because of the fact that there were caskets that folks needed to avoid. You've had where, whether it's here at Wright College, even at the local shopping center that's at Irving and Narragansett here, because of people count between 40,000 to 60,000 people buried here.
Now, Pogoshelski says that that has given rise to a lot of ghost stories, but also he says there have been attempts to reckon with that past. And in fact, there is now a memorial that is honoring those who more than a century ago were buried without recognition. Pogoshelski says there is so much more to Dunning, though, than that macabre past, like the City Colleges of Chicago's Wilbur Wright College. Just behind me there, actually. Chicago-born and raised architect Bertrand Goldberg may be best known for the marina cities that he designed, but he is also the visionary behind the complex at Wilbur Wright College and its striking and soaring pyramid. And Pogoshelski says the impressionist artist Lee Goldie, popular in the 70s and 80s, also grew up, well, just right down Narragansett from where I am standing now. He says that Dunning may not be known or thought of by people as chic, but he likes to bring attention to these stories so, he says, people can feel proud of their neighborhood. Of course, again, that asylum, a sore point. It is long gone, but today those with severe mental health issues may reside at the state-run Chicago Reed Mental Health Center. Local resident Jim Alm is a nurse there, and he says that the job is tough these days because there aren't enough nurses. He says that that was an issue before the pandemic, but he says it got worse during COVID, and he says that being understaffed and overworked takes a toll.
We are forced to do mandatory overtime. And after, you know, two or three long, stressful shifts, the last thing you want to hear is a phone call an hour before you're going to go home, hour and a half before you go home. Hey, you need to stay here for another 8 hours. So it is. It's very stressful. A lot of people are missing downtime for hobbies, relaxation, working weekends, working double shifts, not spending time with their families.
A spokesperson for the State Department of Human Services acknowledges that Reed is having difficulties hiring. As she says, our hospitals everywhere. She says that the Division of Mental Health is working diligently to address these challenges through initiatives such as loan forgiveness, scholarships, and the creation of a behavioral health workforce education center. The dedicated staff of the Chicago Reed Mental Health Center care for some of our state's most vulnerable persons and says that the department is committed to addressing those challenges and with hiring. Now, nurses say, however, that shortages are also a problem at the nearby State Veterans Home. Members of the Nurses Union actually recently demonstrated to bring awareness and attention to these issues. The first residents just moved into the Veterans Home in January. That's actually 8 years after the groundbreaking. Big delays due to political, financial, construction-related issues. The director of the State Veterans Affairs Department says that it is working to hire licensed practical nurses right now, and also that more than 100 staff are currently there taking care of two dozen residents.
One could look at just the numbers and say we're good to go, but I'm not accepting of that. We look at things like social services, activities, trips, family visits, volunteerism, working with our partners with veteran service organizations across the state to ensure that it isn't just, hey, we've got this many hours of care, you're good to go. It's no, are you having a great experience at this veteran's home?
because at the end of the day, none of our veterans want to live in a nursing home. And so we do everything we can to make sure it isn't a nursing home. It's a home.
Before I send it back to you, going to go for a Dunning sweet treat, and that is Eli's. Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama indulged on this famous Chicago dessert. Also, Frank Sinatra, such a fan, he gifted founder Eli Shulman with a Cartier watch that his son Mark wears every day. Now, what makes this cheesecake special and different? Well, for starters, it comes in more than 200 flavors.
We're Chicago, right? It's a different texture, and I think my dad, Eli, wanted to create this unique cake, and that was really in his restaurant in the 70s before Taste of Chicago, really working on getting that right cake. So the cookie crust, the cookie baker's working through the night. It's a faster bake. A lot of cheesecakes are made with a water bath. We use sour cream, so it has a little bit of a bite, a little different flavor.
Eli's has been in Dunning since 1984, moving to its current location in 96, but things have gone so well that it is actually expanding, adding another 42,000 feet to its Dunning location and adding 35 more jobs. Owner Shulman says that they like being in the city, and by the way, they do have partnerships with Wilbur Wright College, including ESL classes for employees and hiring of refugees and individuals with disabilities. And Shulman says, yes, he has at least some cheesecake every day. More coming up, but for now, sending it back to you in the studio.
And Amanda, I'm looking forward to the cheesecake samples that I'm sure you're bringing back to everybody at the station. Thanks, Amanda. Now to Paris and the impact the latest interest rate hike could have on the housing market. Paris.
Brandis, the Federal Reserve's latest rate hike means higher potential costs for things like credit card payments, bank loans, and mortgages. In fact, there are growing fears that housing prices in Chicago and across the country could crash soon. Sales are down about 8% from peak, and some economists say they could plummet as much as 20%. Is it a buyer's market, a seller's market, or simply a bear market? And here to break it down for us are Jeff Smith, Executive Director of DePaul University's Institute of Housing Studies, Ainhoa Garcia, Vice President of the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals, Chicago Chapter, and Dennis Rodkin, Residential Real Estate Reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Welcome all of you to Chicago tonight. So Dennis, as we mentioned, the pace of home sales is slowing nationally. Prices are off their peak in June. Are we seeing the same trends in Chicago?
We've started to see a little bit of it, yes. We just yesterday got data for August, and prices in the city of Chicago dropped by about 5% from a year before. For the region, they're still growing. They're still going up. For August, they were up about 3%. Though the price is down not only from 2021, when prices were surging, but from 2019, which is prior to the pandemic housing boom. So we have started to see it, especially in Chicago, but within the next few months, we may see it in the larger metro area.
So the city seeming to reflect the numbers nationwide. Ainhoa Garcia, on Wednesday, we all know the Fed increased interest rates for a third time this year, 0.75%. Mortgages, the average mortgage rate is somewhere around 6% right now. Could that go even higher?
Yes, it is expected, and we have seen it throughout the year. I do anticipate to see it, and we have to prepare our buyers and our sellers to correct even the strategies when we are buying and selling, especially too, for them to understand that in order to sell, they need to consider these corrections.
Jeff Smith, do you anticipate that because of higher interest rates that that sales and prices may drop off in Chicago over the next year as well?
Yes, I definitely would expect prices and sales to slow down. You know, I think low interest rates really drove significant increases in demand, along with, you know, changing consumer preferences for single family homes during the pandemic. And that paired with very limited supply of for sale housing really caused prices to boom during the last few years. And now that the demand side might be slowing down due to higher interest rates, I would expect, you know, that to cool off price growth and sales activity overall.
And Dennis Rodman, Rodkin, we all know how Chicago is dependent on its housing market, and the U.S. economy at large is very reliant on the housing market. And in Chicago, you've got these mega projects like Lincoln Yards or the 78 that have plans to build thousands of new units. Could this little correction here put a damper on some of those plans?
Well, I think most of these developers look very long term. It's also possible, you know, if buying becomes too difficult, renting will become more popular, and we might be able to shift some of those units. But the other thing is to think about some of those projects you've talked about, Paris, and some of the big condo buildings downtown. Really, buyers often are not interest rate dependent. We just saw a sale today of the highest priced home in Chicago in 2022, a condo downtown at the St. Regis went for $20.5 million. That's the second sale at over $20 million so far this year. And a lot of the people buying up at that level, at the $3, $4, $20 million level, interest rates have very little effect on them. They're right. Paying cash. They have cash and bonuses and stock market wealth stockpiled, and so they're not as affected.
So the super wealthy not so affected by this, but I know, Garcia, what about first-time home buyers or homeowners looking to perhaps sell but now thinking, well, I've got a pretty good interest rate, maybe I should hang on to this for now?
Well, anytime we see a revision or a correction in the economy affecting the real estate market, the first ones to get hurt is the minorities, the brown and the black communities, lower income families, and those who really dream to own their home as the vehicle to build wealth, to pay the college for their kids and their retirement plans. This is the main problem. We now see that those families that could afford a $1,500 mortgage payment no longer qualify because of the interest rates. So this is the main reason why we need this correction in the pricing, so we can still balance this situation out and still have these lower income families and minorities still being able to become homeowners. That's what I see the most need right now from higher spheres.
Jeff Smith, what about that? I mean, could this be a necessary correction to bring prices more in line so that more folks can afford to buy homes? I mean, there is a lack of affordable housing in Chicago and across the nation. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the data on just overall housing affordability, which is the relationship between house prices or rents and incomes, you see house prices and rents have both grown pretty dramatically over the last year or two, while incomes have not. Therefore, housing affordability is a real challenge for both first-time home buyers, moderate income renters. And so I do think that slowing down the housing market and slowing price growth may have some long-term benefits to helping people, you know, access home ownership. Now, of course, interest rates going up might make it still more expensive, even if house prices are a bit lower. And you still have to, I think, address the issue of the lack of like starter homes and accessible, like modest cost home ownership options for modest income home buyers. I think that's a big challenge that still needs to be addressed. But in the big picture, affordability is a challenge. Dropping house prices hopefully will address that to some degree.
Dennis Rodkin, you have some onlookers worried about a crash akin to 2008. Do you see trends leading in that direction at all in Chicago?
I think it's too soon to say that. It does seem very likely that things will soften both on price and on the number of sales. But I don't think we have any reason really yet to think about a crash. We were found in one national report to be one of the most vulnerable markets, the other being New York City or the New Jersey suburbs of New York City, in the event of a recession. But part of our problem is we have quite a few people who are underwater on the mortgage. That means you owe more on the house than it's worth. And if one of the reasons we're vulnerable is if we turn down, those are the people who are more likely to say, you know what, this investment is not performing for me. I'm just going to walk away. I'm just going to let it fall into foreclosure. That's one of the things we could see if things start to crash. But I think it's too soon. Once again, price is still going up for the region in general, for region wide, though they have fallen in the city. So I think it's too soon to say that we'll have a crash. But if we did have a crash, Chicago would be quite vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. And I know, Garcia, you're mentioning that communities of color might be the most vulnerable homeowners among that group. But what programs are out there for folks that might be underwater right now?
There are many. And if you allow me, then I would actually mention something to what Dennis mentioned before. I agree with the market not crashing, not using that word, at least just yet, because out of all the years in history, looking at data, right now we have the most 35-year-old ready and able to purchase. So, and the inventory nationwide for this year, existing inventory was 870,000 for over 30 millions of 35 years old. So it's still inventory and the demand and the inventory that is existing right now, it is still a good standing. It will have to completely disappear the demand and all these people not wanting to buy in order for these to crash. However, in responding to your question, for the affordable housing for lower income families, they are programs. The main issue that we see with our communities is the lack of resources, also the accessibility to assets. Sometimes they have when they come and talk to me in the office, they have low credit scores. So programs to fix their credit so they could qualify for better loan products or these grants. They are grants nationally in the counties in Illinois. We do have grants. And right now I'm actually at the NAREB Latitude in San Diego conference learning many, many resources. Right. And we do have them available.
And as you said, a lot of demand out there. And there are certainly more restrictions on getting a home loan than there were in 2008. So you would think that might stave off some of the worst of what happened back then. We have to leave it there. Our thanks to Jeff Smith, Ainoa Garcia, and Dennis Rodkin. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And up next, an exit interview with one of Chicago's most prominent cultural icons. So stay with us.
Much of the story of Latinos in America is that of entrepreneurship. About 5 million Latino-owned businesses currently exist in the U.S.
Predominantly Latino communities often bear the environmental burden of heavy industry. Residents of those communities say they have a hard time making their concerns heard.
A Chicago-based photographer has a personal understanding of immigration, and he has spent years documenting small businesses.
The forces of gentrification can make people being priced out of their neighborhoods feel powerless. But the founders of Lolita's Bodega say residents have more power than they think.
And there's much more ahead on the program, including reports of damage done to Douglas Park following a recent music festival. But first, this weekend marks the beginning of the end of Maestro Ricardo Muti's tenure as music director of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. We visited Symphony Center to hear him lead the orchestra in a rousing rehearsal of works by Tchaikovsky. Arts critic Hedy Weiss spoke with him about his time in Chicago.
This afternoon, when you were leading a rehearsal, I was thinking if they had brought in even just 3 or 4 classrooms of kids, I think they would have been in awe. And I think what happens is there are barriers in just the way the music is talked about, rather than just exposing them.
So the problem is the education. It's everything lies there. If the children, from when they are children, they have a right education about music. But when I say education, doesn't mean to have a small flute in the hands and to be bored playing beep, 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 or to sing the national anthem. Italian or American or Japanese, is to be educated to, as I said in other occasions, to enter and enjoy, to walk in the forest of the sounds. If they are educated to music when they are bambini, when they are children, then you will have the new educated audience that doesn't come to see the conductor jumping on the podium or the soloist coming on stage in eccentric clothes to impress the people before he or she plays. To be dignified, the attention must be on the music that you create. The society today is more a visual society. People want to see, not only to hear, or maybe they listen less. They want to see, they want to be entertained. It's like when you go to a restaurant, the difference, now I'm speaking in a very simple way, when I'm in Italy and I have the spaghetti, no? You ask in a restaurant spaghetti, spaghetti al pomodoro, tomato, and you have the spaghetti, you see that is the spaghetti with the tomato. Here, it's different because you have to find the spaghetti under a lot of things that they put on. So because people, before they enjoy eating, they want to see, they want to be attracted. And this is a problem.
Let's just talk a little bit about how you want to be remembered here.
There are many possibilities. Possibility that they will forget me, possibility they will remember me in a bad way, and they will remember me in a good way. I don't know, it depends. I have been in Chicago happy with my orchestra, my musicians. I am a musician among them. We never had not even 1 minute of friction or disagreement. So we had a wonderful time on stage, great seriousness. The orchestra is a great orchestra. When I took the orchestra, was a great orchestra. Fritz Reiner made this orchestra. I am old-fashioned music director. I think that music director should be not only the music director, but also like a father or a brother. In my case, a grandfather of the musicians. So I think that I cannot predict what will be the memory of Riccardo Muti in the future. One thing I know, I've been always in my work very honest with the musicians, with the public. I never tried to buy them their love or their friendship. In this, I'm very much Southern Italian.
Riccardo Muti's farewell season begins tonight with music by Tchaikovsky, Brahms, and more. Still to come on Chicago Tonight, no need to make street space for Chicago's newest food delivery service. Details about a new device that delivers on sidewalks. Talks are underway as the Chicago Park District takes over Dunning's historic conservation area. We're live with the group who's handing it over. Neighbors report that Riot Fest has left Douglas Park damaged. We hear how the fest impacts residents around the park. And 18 monumental and fantastical folk art creatures are taking over Katini Park in West Suburban Wheaton. But first, some more of today's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling on two state senators from his own party to resign. State Senator Emil Jones III is facing federal charges for allegedly taking a bribe from a firm that installed red light cameras in the state. And State Senator Michael Hastings is accused of abusing his wife and has faced charges of verbal abuse by a State House lobbyist. Hastings has denied all of those charges. The calls to step down come as both Jones and Hastings resigned from their leadership positions at the request of the Senate president. In a statement, Governor Pritzker, who is up for re-election, says, quote, "Resigning only their leadership roles falls short of what the public should expect. I want to send a clear message to the people of Illinois. Corruption and abuse have no place here." Chicago officials are reporting the city has received approximately 925 migrants from Texas since August 31st. 33 new migrants arrived just yesterday, and city officials say they are expecting even more. According to a statement Mayor Lori Lightfoot's office gave to Politico, Lightfoot has had, quote, "productive conversations with mayors in Democratic cities around the state to help care for the migrants."
Lightfoot also says she met with officials at the Department of Homeland Security and other agencies, making clear the need for help. A Cook County judge is being placed on restricted duties after being arrested this week on allegations of domestic battery. Sixth Municipal District Judge Carl Boyd was arrested Tuesday night following an incident at his home. Police say a 57-year-old woman suffered a, quote, large laceration to the left side of her face after Boyd allegedly threw a bottle at a glass door window, causing the window to break. Boyd has since been charged with a misdemeanor count of domestic battery causing bodily harm. Employees at a Starbucks in West Suburban Elmhurst say they've filed for union representation, joining hundreds of other coffee shops in the Chicago area and around the country. The Elmhurst workers wrote to Starbucks founder and interim CEO Howard Schultz in part, quote, "We've waited long enough for corporate to make basic changes to improve our environment. Instead, we have seen labor cuts to further increase profits." Last month, employees at a Lakeview Starbucks also announced their intent to unionize. If successful, the Elmhurst and Lakeview workers would join colleagues at seven unionized Starbucks coffee shops in the area. And now, Paris, we toss it back to you.
Thanks, Brandis. There's a new food delivery service that hopes to make it past a pilot program in Chicago. And unlike Uber Eats or Grubhub, this service needs only an app and a sidewalk to operate. WTTW News reporter Patty Wetley joins us now to explain. All right, Patty, so amid all the drama at yesterday's City Council meeting, a pilot program for personal devices, delivery devices, or PDDs, was approved by Alder people. What exactly is a PDD?
It's just a fancy word for robots. So picture these things that kind of look like a cross between a Yeti cooler and like a Star Wars droid cruising down the sidewalks to deliver you your, you know, Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or grocery order. Basically, we're talking about small robots that can deliver for grocery stores and restaurants.
So the robot revolution is underway, and as I understand, they have like sensors so they don't bump into people or get run over by cars. We'll see how all that works.
Yeah.
But what does this pilot program entail?
Well, a lot of it is to see how they actually do interact with pedestrians and work on city sidewalks and crossing streets. Right now, they're used quite a bit on campuses, including UIC, where I'm told students like to jump over them. But, you know, someone messaged me on Twitter saying that at Purdue they're used and they need a very clear path in front of them to cross the street. So what the city wants to assess is, do these help small businesses at all, or do they create too much chaos on sidewalks that are already crowded with cafes and scooters and dogs and pedestrians? So they've got 2 years to kind of figure this out.
And hopefully they keep your drinks cool as they're scooting along the sidewalk there. All right, Patty, we'll keep watching this. And you can read Patty's full story on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. And now we check back in with Amanda, who has spent the day in Dunning on the city's northwest side as part of our In Your Neighborhood series. Amanda.
Yeah, Paris, I'm joined now by Mary Joyce Cahill. She is director of the Dunning Reed Conservation Area Board. Thanks so much for joining us. To begin with, what is this conservation area for those who might not have had the opportunity to, or the good fortune, from what I hear, it's beautiful, to visit?
Well, thank you, Amanda, for coming to our neighborhood. Welcome to Dunning. And yes, asking about our wonderful hidden gem called the conservation area. It is a wetland and a natural resource area that has been in the community forever. And there's been always, community involvement has always occurred within the conservation area. Many, many years ago, apparently, I have some information on this, realtors wanted to build a Home Depot there. The community joined together and actually stopped that to maintain the area. Over the years, it's been challenging having different managers, resources, then COVID. So right now, we're really excited because the Chicago Park District is going to take over management.
And in fact, there was movement on that just today. So again, why is the Park District taking over and what might that do for the area?
Well, basically, they're going to help clean it up and show what a wonderful resource area it is, and also make it more accessible to the community. Right now, the invasive species have taken over. Over the years, community groups, the board, many, many, many people in the community, I'm just one person, but behind me, there's so many that have maintained the trails just with their own tools, their own sweat, and their own time. There were trails that walk through the area that shows the different types of woodlands. In the spring, there's vernal pools that they're actually crawfish in. And also, we've had a coyote study done there. The National Coyote Study was done there. So there's.
And what did that find?
That there's coyotes, and that they like to follow railroad tracks, and they actually migrate. It was very, very interesting.
You haven't encountered one, though, have you?
Heard them. Oh, we heard the pups sometimes at night. It was lovely, yeah.
Cute, when they're not close.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I don't have an aversion to coyotes anymore. I don't think any of us do that were involved in it.
Now, invasive species, what sorts?
A thistle is the one that comes to mind. And if you drive by, you'll see these very long, feathery-looking plants, which are so pretty, but they actually take over and they smother, and the natural species can't grow.
Now, this has been obviously a source of respite and joy for you, but also for others in the community. Can you share some of the history of this area?
Well, yes. Dunning itself has a very long history, and the area was the original site for the Chicago Asylum. I think I have the name right, the Dunning Asylum. I'm not originally from Dunning. However, when if you even Google it or look it up, it was an asylum, a mental asylum, that has a very dark history. And it was where apparently a poorhouse was also. Basically, someone told me once that their grandparents used to say to them, if you don't behave, you're going to Dunning. So over the years, that has changed, thank goodness, and the conservation area has really been developed into a beautiful resource for the community, as well as the patients that are over there.
I was going to say, so this is used almost as therapy now for individuals who reside at the state-run mental health facility.
Absolutely, even just looking at the grounds. Right now, it needs a little bit of work. However, just looking at the grounds is very peaceful.
So what is your ultimate hope for this area and what it will become?
That just more accessible to the community. There's such a, everyone is so excited right now because there's a light, we're really there where there's going to be a management, directors that are going to take over, that are going to open up the trails, that are going to remove the invasive species. Where the community, we, as I said, in the past, they've used their own tools, their own sweat. We still want to get in there, get our nails dirty, get our boots on the ground, and just start. We're really excited over this.
Well, thank you for that work, especially because, as you alluded to, you're not originally from the area, though Dunning Pride clearly represent. Tell us a little bit about Dunning and why you enjoy living here.
Well, as I told you earlier, I ended up in the area because of love. And it's a really strong community as far as support and just a bonding. Very opening, very welcome. From day one, when I came here not knowing a soul, I went to the library and met many people and said, oh, we have this organization, we're going to meet here, we're doing this, and it just blossomed from there.
And Mary, by the way, is not only the director of the conservation area of Dunning, but she is also a nurse who, of course, gave a lot of care to patients all throughout COVID and such. So we thank you for all of your care and attention that you've given to them, and as well as spending your time with us. Thanks so much. That was, again, Mary Joyce Cahill.
Thank you.
Wearing a lot of hats.
Back to you in the studio.
All right, Amanda, thanks very much. And up next, how neighbors of Douglas Park feel about the damage done from Riot Fest.
Three festivals and several weeks later, Douglas Park is now fully open to the public. And even though the last festival, Riot Fest, is over, residents say its impact on the park can still be seen. They point to imprints from where stages were, track marks from vehicles, and damage to sports fields. Joining us are Anton Atkins, who lives across from Douglas Park, and Elvia Rodriguez Ochoa, Director of Education and Engagement with Friends of the Park, who happens to be at Douglas Park right now. We also reached out to Riot Fest, the Chicago Park District, and the local alderman, George Cardenas, none of whom responded to our request. Thanks to the two of you for joining us. Anton Atkins, let's start with you, please. What was it like living across the street from that festival all weekend?
Yeah, in short, it was a great disturbance. North Lawndale and Douglas Park in particular doesn't see that influx of people if not for certain events. And Riot Fest being the third festival that we have seen this summer, the biggest one of all three. In short, yes, what a disturbance that it was, beyond not having a place to park, not being able to access the park in its totality. As we have grown accustomed to, it is great now that it is finally over and we can get back to our daily lives the way that we were living it before they got here.
Elvia Rodriguez Ochoa, you were out assessing the damage today. What did you see?
Sure, yes. I was out here with a group of students from the University of Chicago, giving them a quick tour. And, you know, I concur with what Anton said. You see the damage across the area that was starting from the soccer field. I'm actually near the turf soccer field this year, but you can see the damage. You can see the imprint, not just on the grass, but also on one of the baseball diamonds. So the imprint from the stages, you can still see the pattern of the stage there. And it stretches from California all the way to the boulevard. So the entire length of the park on this section of the park.
And as you're speaking, we're looking at some of the photos that each of you took of some of that damage. Elvia, it sounds like there are some people in the park using it right now. Anton, you were also out there today. What's some of the damage been to the sports fields and the impact on sports leagues of the parks being closed for as long as it is?
Yeah, I want to start by just saying it's unfortunate that these leagues throughout the year, we know and understand that they have to pay ahead of time to rent out the fields or whatever part of the park that they are using. And any other time that Riot Fest or any other festival happens, their leagues are canceled and they're not repaid for the funding or the money that they used in their league to rent out the park. That shouldn't be that way. They should at least get that funding back. But beyond that, we understand and know that some of the high schools around here, or even elementary schools, some of them, utilize the park for their summer or fall leagues. Elvia just mentioned part of the baseball field or even the softball field. Obviously, there must have been a stage or something that's there. It looks terrible. It's really in bad condition. It's not playable, whether that's for official games or for practices, whatever it is. It's a shame, if I may say it quite frankly, that these kids who do not have the facilities within their own schools, it's so great that there's a park nearby, right? But they do not have the capacity to play at them due to the circumstances. That is beyond them as student athletes and beyond their school. They have to suffer. And at least children should not be the ones that will have to suffer these consequences.
Anton, how does this affect other residents, who, like your neighbors who live in the area?
Yeah, Riot Fest, I believe, is just a microcosm of the longstanding divestment and neglect of not only Douglas Park, but North Lawndale as a whole. We see it that these three festivals, specifically Riot Fest for the past 7 years, has been dumped into our community with this border war about what whose ward it's in and who has the control, and park district superintendent, and you know, the new measures that they just put in place. The residents have been stuck in between all of this. Everyone, it seems, has benefited from this, but the residents, part of the park being either shut off or some way restricted from us throughout the summer And then as you see and as you've shown to your viewers, what we've left, what are we left with at the end of the summer? This is the third festival. This is not just what Riot Fest has done, but this is Heat Wave in July. It's also Lyrical Lemonade in June. And I think personally that none of us, none of the residents that live around this park should have to have a park in such a manner and in a sense say, hey, you know, kind of deal with it.
Elvia, what's been the response from the city to the pushback of these festivals?
Well, right now, the Chicago Park District has decided to pass a new standard in how they are treating festivals. They want the concert to be approved through the Park District Board. Prior to this, it was, you know, staff members and the CEO of the Park District that would approve these festivals. But now they want to switch it so that it's the actual board that votes on it, which would give the public an opportunity to present to the board their concerns and their issues and the possibility of some of these festivals being voted down. So that's a very different way of doing business, which we appreciate, and we hope that it does pass, and so that community residents would have the opportunity to push back on these festivals. Because it's not just Douglas. There's concerns at Harrison Park. There's concerns at Grant Park. There are other parks that have mentioned that they have festivals and that they're not totally happy with them being there because a lot of people feel that these festivals are imposed upon them.
Mm-hmm. Anton, as we just heard from Elvia, the Park District is planning to adopt a new rule that would require approval from its Board of Commissioners for events that draw over 10,000 people. Do you think that's a step in the right direction?
Yeah, definitely it's a step in the right direction. Some would even say it's a step in the right direction that's long overdue, that this should have been the process long ago if you're going to have a board, you know, in the first place. It would be great as a vote of confidence that there is potentially this board is elected even, that our peers may have the opportunity to sit on this board and there may be a fair process, one with parity, one that we can see that there's actual progress being made and it's shown in good faith, because we would hate to have these meetings where we present this evidence, where we would have the people of the community come out, voice their opinion, and give everything that they believe where it should happen or should not happen. And then at the end of the day, the vote goes against what the people have spoken. That would really not help us in this regard, to say it very plainly. But yes, it is a step in the right direction. We hope that it will actually benefit. The people will benefit and good fruit will come from it.
Elvia, we've got about 15, 20 seconds left. What more would you like to see done?
Well, we would like to see the city, the park district, seriously consider a permanent site for these types of festivals. You know, right now there's a lot of talk because the Bears are leaving Soldier Field. So right now that's top of mind for a lot of people, that is potentially a site for doing this. And that presents a real opportunity. And not just Soldier Field, there's also talk about McCormick Place being redone. So these are two spaces that could potentially serve
a permanent site where people
in a different way.
So these concerts aren't in the neighborhood the way they have been so far. We'll have to leave it there. My thanks to Anton Adkins and Elvia Rodriguez Ochoa for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we check back in with Amanda Vinicky, who's reporting live from Chicago's Dunning community. But first, a look at the weather.
And now back to Amanda, who has spent the day in Dunning on the city's northwest side as part of our In Your Neighborhood series. Hey, Amanda, it looks nice and crisp out there. You know, earlier in the program, you talked about the Veterans Home opening in the area. The first residents just moved in 8 years after the groundbreaking. So why has it taken so long to get the home up and running?
Good question, Paris. As you'll recall, we reported a lot on this at the time, that budget impasse that took place when Governor Bruce Rauner was going fighting with the Democratic-controlled General Assembly. Well, that budget fight led to a delay. So basically, you had the veterans' home sitting as a mostly empty shell for a couple of years while that fight bore out in Springfield. That, of course, then caused construction issues. So that is why you just had a couple of residents move in this January. Budget fighting and politics. But you may still wonder, right now there's 24 residents. That doesn't seem like much for a facility that is supposed to be able to be a home to about 200 individuals, veterans. And the reason that is, when we spoke with the director of the State Veterans Affairs Department, he says it's because right now they're at their max for what is allowed under federal guidelines, as they are awaiting really what's federal certification. And also, by the way, once that certification comes, they will get additional money to help the state care for those residents.
And Amanda, I think that's Wright Junior College behind you. It looks kind of like a I remember passing by it all the time as a kid. Looks like a spaceship. Fun location for you tonight. Thanks very much. And up next, fantastical folk art creatures make a colorful splash at a suburban park. But first, a look at some events happening this weekend.
From embroidered textiles to painted pottery, Mexico's folk art traditions burst with all the brilliant color and life of the country itself. Some of these traditions go back centuries, but one beloved folk art form is not even 100 years old yet, the exuberantly imaginative, fantastical creatures known as alebrijes. The art form exploded in popularity when an alebrije named Pepita was featured in the 2017 film Coco. Now, gigantic alebrijes made by master Mexican artisans have taken up residence in a north suburban park. Producer Erica Gunderson recently went for a visit. Here's another look at this very big story.
Es una pieza mágica. Es una pieza con sueños de nosotros.
Ellos nos van hablando, nos van diciendo, esto sí, esto no.
You're not dreaming. Giant, fantastical creatures like winged lemurs, two-headed dogs, and rabbit kangaroos are indeed frolicking among the flowers in Wheaton's Cantini Park. 18 monumental versions of the folk art known as alebrijes are in the park as part of an exhibit brought here by the Mexican Cultural Center DuPage in collaboration with Mesli Artist Collective in Mexico City.
Pues aquí tenemos a Toshli. Se llama así porque en náhuatl significa conejo. Y pues bueno, tiene, es como un conejo canguro con una cresta como de iguana.
If you've traveled to Mexico, you might have brought home an alebrije like this little cat as a memento. But the alebrijes on display at Cantini Park are much closer to the original artist's fever dream of fantastical creatures that existed only in his imagination. They're also a little bit bigger.
Y las aletas, tanto las aletas como la... La calavera son inspiradas en los peces marinos que viven en la profundidad.
The artists say the inspiration for the intricate adornment on each alebrije can come from anywhere.
Yo me inspiro en la naturaleza. Para realizar un alebrije, sí influye mucho tu estado de ánimo. Y plasma, siempre vas a plasmar tus sentimientos en lo que sientes en ese momento para pintar tu...
Este alebrije se llama bicéfalo, entre el bien y el mal. Viene inspirado en el yin yang, por eso tiene la cabeza peleando contra la otra. Pero más que nada es como una pelea entre uno mismo, entre el bien y el mal que tienes con...
Arturo Sorate constructed his alebrije, a combination of toucan, jaguar, bull, and butterfly, he calls the malucan, with recycled materials like paper and plastic bottles that he solicited through social media.
Tiene que ver mucho con las especies en peligro de extinción y la fascinación del ser humano por apropiarse de otras especies de animales que deberían de ser libres. Claro, toda mi obra, mi producción y mi lema es el 90% de la producción es reciclado. Porque es importante cuidar nuestro medio ambiente, convivir en armonía con los animales. las personas mexicanas, los latinos, tenemos mucha resiliencia y mucha fuerza. Entonces es empoderar todo lo que significamos.
The visiting artists say they hope their big and brilliant alebrijes will inspire people to learn more about Mexico's many artistic traditions.
De hecho, lo que nosotros venimos a mostrar aquí en Chicago es solamente una pequeñísima parte de todo lo que hay en México.
For Chicago Tonight, this is Erica Gunderson.
The exhibit, Alebrijes, Creatures of a Dream World, will be on display at Katini Park through November 2nd. And starting October 4th, the park is adding Día de los Muertos ofrendas. Visit our website for more details. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by Alexandra and John Nichols, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that's our show for this Thursday night.
Please join us tomorrow night at 7 for the Week in Review. And now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Paris Schutz.
And I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud of its partners named Illinois Leading Lawyers by the Law Bulletin Publishing Company of Chicago.